a victory hour from 5 to 6 a.m. You'll learn how to implement the 5 a.m. method in the near future, the billionaire replied. You two cats are becoming open enough and strong enough to embrace the 20-20-20 formula soon. And like I suggested, since we've hung together, your lives will never be the same once you know and run it. The 20-20-20 formula is an absolute game changer. For now, please just understand that a great mindset with a poor heart set is a giant reason good people end up dissolving their attempts at greatness. Oh, added the billionaire, I should also mention that working on your heart set isn't only about removing negative emotions that have built up from life's frustrations, disappointments, and burdens. It's also about amplifying the healthy ones. That's why part of your morning routine needs to have a gratitude practice as part of it, to feed your sense of awe and fuel your reservoirs of exuberance. Love it, said the artist. Profound what you're sharing, brother. Revolutionary, I'll admit, he emphasized. Yes, absolutely. And so the Spellbinder taught me to do some profound work on my heart set each morning, during my victory hour. Yet here's the thing. Even upgrading your heart set along with growing your mindset before the first rays of the sun display themselves still means you're only doing 50% of the personal mastery work required to materialize the interior empires that will yield the outer empires of your highest wishes. After mindset and heart set, you also need to fortify your health set each morning. New word for me, observed the entrepreneur. Health set, I like it. Well, this one speaks to your physical dimension, explained the billionaire, as the SUV passed one of the many tea plantations in Mauritius. One of the main elements of your rise to legendary is longevity. Here's a quick tip if you want to lead your field and experience continuous escalations of your eminence. Do not die. You'll never become a titan of your industry and an icon who makes history if you're dead. Both the entrepreneur and the artist grinned as the billionaire began to clap vigorously, apparently as happy as a family of squirrels playing in a forest on hearing his own words. But I am being serious. Beautiful things happen once you commit seriously to peak fitness and go hard on cheating aging. Just imagine living an extra few decades and staying ultra healthy as you do so. That's another few decades to refine your craft, to grow into an even more influential leader, to produce work that's radical artistry, to compound your prosperity and to build a luminous legacy that will enrich all of humanity. Epic producers and great leaders understand that you just can't rise to mastery without leveraging and then armor plating your vitality. Every day's just dramatically better with some exercise in it. I need to say that again because it's so essential to a life amazingly lived. Every day is just dramatically better with some exercise in it. And few things feel as good as getting uber fit. I guess what I'm offering to you is that health set is all about dialing in your physical dimension so your brain is operating at its highest level of cognition, and so your energy is igniting, and so your stress is dissolving, and so your joy is expanding. Getting really healthy and ultra fit worked wonders for my business, you know? The billionaire paused. He drew his hands together, as is the custom in India, where people say namaste, which is Sanskrit for I bow to the divine in you. And that brings me to soul set, lady and gentlemen. I have learned that every single one of us has an unstained spirit and spotless soulfulness that rests at our very center. Most of the world is uninterested in whispers from and the requirements of the soul. As a race, we've neglected that portion of ourselves that is most wise, wonderful, and eternal. The majority, programmed by society, is all about getting the goods that will boost popularity, gaining validation and social currency from their selfies, and accomplishing popular results that will give them legitimacy. However, feeding your spirit daily is the activity of genuine leadership royalty. And tell me, Mr. Riley, when you refer to soul set, what exactly are you speaking of? Inquired the entrepreneur, clearly making steady progress as a student of the Spellbinder's teachings. She also appeared more present, strong and free than at any time since the artist had met her.
"Yeah, I'm not clear either, brother," mentioned the artist sincerely, as he too reclined in his seat, as the chauffeur navigated the vehicle up the winding driveway of the tycoon's home. More butterflies floated by. The double rainbow remained transfixed in the sky. The billionaire peered at it and then went on.
"There is no exquisite beauty without some strangeness in the proportions," observed the billionaire, as he waved to his gardeners and stuck his tongue out at a frog. "The English poet Christopher Marlowe said that, and dude, he was speaking some truth there. Anywho, to help you understand the Fourth Interior Empire, please allow me to bring this learning all together by simply saying that since mindset is all about your psychology, and heartset is all about your emotionality, and healthset relates to your physiology, soulset refers to your spirituality. That's it. Nothing mystical, really. Nothing religious. Nothing voodoo or freaky."
"Go deeper, please," pressed the entrepreneur. "You're reordering my perception with all of these points."
"Well, it's all the spellbinder's work, not mine. Kindly remember that. Anywho, my encouragement is to become a devout spiritualist. And just so that term doesn't spook you and shut you down to this education, all I mean to say is spend some time in the quietude of the early morning to make the return to the courage, conviction, and compassion within you. All I'm encouraging is that you soar with the angels of your highest nature and dance with the gods of your most precious talents for a little time before sunrise, as a tribute to what's most wise and true within you. Only then will you begin to know and understand the Shangri-Las of greatness and Nirvanas of light that inhabit your sovereign self. Soulset is all about remembering who you truly are. The sages, saints, and seers of history all rose at dawn to forge even weightier bonds with the hero we all have at our cores. Insecurity, scarcity, selfishness, and unhappiness are all children of fear. These characteristics were taught to you. They sure aren't your natural state. After we are born, we begin the departure from our spiritual power and descend into more of what this damaged world wants us to be. We become more about acquiring, hoarding, and comparing instead of creating, helping, and adventuring. Awake human beings work on elevating their soul set in the serene hours before daybreak, in the sanctuary of solitude, silence, and stillness. Through hope-filled contemplation of the finest version of yourself, without errors in your character, by marvelous meditation on how you wish to show up during the day ahead, by thoughtful consideration of the quickness of life and the suddenness of the exit, and by rich reflections on what gifts you aim to materialize, so you leave the world in better shape than you encountered it on your birth. These are some of the ways you can raise your soul-set game. Yes, continued the billionaire, the vulnerability of his open-hearted delivery displaying itself even more potently in his now soft voice. You too have a brave, loving, and wildly powerful hero at your foundation. I know to most people this idea sounds crazy, but it is truth that I speak. And by spending some time on your soul set during your victory hour, you'll improve your awareness of, and relationship with, this most magnificent part of you. So you are consistently serving society instead of gratifying the ego hungers of your smaller self. And with better daily awareness of our mindset, heartset, healthset, and soulset, we'll make the better daily choices that will guarantee better daily results, right? Pronounced the entrepreneur, reciting the three-step success formula she discovered in an earlier mentoring session. Precisely, applauded the billionaire. Exactly, he added, nodding his head. And please, always stay sincere to what's most important in a life greatly lived, pleaded the billionaire. Be not seduced by the superficialities that suffocate the human spirit and divorce us from the best within us. He pulled a thin wallet out of a front pocket and read the words of Tolstoy from a tattered piece of paper that had been folded in a sleeve. Here's what you would have heard him say, in his raspy yet dignified voice, if you were in that SUV with them. A quiet, secluded life in the country with the possibility of being useful to people to whom it is easy to do good, and who are not accustomed to have it done to them? Then work which one hopes may be of some use. Then rest, nature, books, music, love, or one's neighbor. Such is my idea of happiness.
The three companions were now standing outside the magnate's house. An owl was perched on a lemon tree. It hooted terrifically as it saw the billionaire. He replied with a simple wave.
"Nice to see you, buddy," the billionaire said. "What took you so long to come home?"
History maker focus number 4. Day stacking.
Remember that each of your prized days represents your precious life in miniature, the billionaire observed. As you live each day, so you craft your life. We all are so focused on pursuing our futures that we generally ignore the exceedingly important value of a single day. And yet what we are doing today is creating our future.
It's like that sailboat over there, expounded Mr. Riley, pointing to a watercraft off in the distance.
A few navigational shifts, seemingly irrelevant and infinitesimal, when done consistently over a long voyage, make the difference between ending up in breathtaking Brazil or fantastic Japan. All you need to do to pretty much guarantee a hugely successful and splendidly meaningful life is own the day. Make those 1% course corrections and improvements over each 24-hour allotment you receive, and these days will slip into weeks, and your weeks into months, and your months will slip into your years. The Spellbinder called such daily personal and professional optimizations micro-wins. Enhancing anything in your day, ranging from your morning routine to a thought pattern to a business skill to a personal relationship, by only 1%, delivers at least a 30%, yes, 30% elevation only a month from starting. Stay with the program, and in just 1 year, the pursuit you've been focusing on has elevated 365% at least. The main point I'm making here is concentrate monomaniacally on creating great days, and they'll stack into a gorgeous life.
Small daily, seemingly insignificant improvements, when done consistently over time, yield staggering results, reinforced the entrepreneur, recalling one of the brain tattoos she'd been schooled in during this magical adventure.
Yes, declared the billionaire cheerfully, as he stretched and then touched his toes while whispering to himself, life is good, and I must help these two kind souls become great before it's too late.
Here's the real takeaway, the billionaire carried on. Elite producers and everyday heroes understand that what you do each day matters far more than what you do once in a while. Consistency really is a key ingredient of mastery, and regularity is a necessity if you're amped to make history.
In that moment, the entrepreneur's attention was stolen by her phone as the screen lit up. Stunningly, the following words showed up in lettering that resembled blood dripping, leaving her trembling and shaken.
A killer is coming.
Baby, what's up? Asked the artist, revealing more of the growing intimacy of their relationship.
Yes, what happened?
Wondered the billionaire on seeing the ghost white face of the entrepreneur.
It's...
She sputtered. She fell to her knees, in a flower bed close to where the chauffeur had parked the SUV. Almost as quickly, she stood up again. It's another death threat. They're telling me someone is on the way to kill me. The investors again, pushing me to leave the firm.
Guess what, guys? The entrepreneur said, pivoting into a posture of high confidence and mighty defiance.
I'm not leaving. I built this company. I love what I do. I would do anything for my team. Our products are incredible, and growing the enterprise has given me great fulfillment. I'm ready to fight them. Let's go. Bring it on, I say.
It's being handled, murmured the billionaire, echoing what he'd said at his beach on first learning about the situation. Just stay fully present to the teaching you're learning and this special opportunity of being a new member of the 5 AM Club. Keep having a blast here with me in Mauritius. Continue this little love story unfolding between you and my tattooed friend over here, smiled the billionaire, and keep strengthening the awareness of your natural power as a leader, performer, and human being. I'm really happy to see your progress. You already seem braver, lighter, and much more peaceful. Good on you.
Getting up at 5 a.m. is getting easier as each day passes, the entrepreneur said, feeling comforted and sounding composed. The insights you're sharing are valuable. I'm growing a lot. I can't wait to go granular on how to make the habit stick and learn the 20-20-20 formula so I know exactly what to do during my victory hour. I've been practicing some yoga and walking along the sea in the darkness before the sun comes up. Yet I'd love some help on a more specific ritual. I know you have one, but the philosophy so far has been remarkably helpful.
The precise methodology is coming soon. At this point, I simply want you to know that the concept I've just shared with you both is called the Day Stacking Foundation. Winning definitely does start at your beginning. Own your morning, and the quality of your day rises exponentially, which in turn upgrades the caliber of your life exceptionally. You'll be so much more energetic, productive, confident, excellent, happy, and serene, even on the most difficult of days, when you calibrate the front end of it. Okay, now you two go and have an amazing day together. I love the words of the poet John Keats, who wrote, I almost wish we were butterflies and lived but 3 summer days. 3 such days with you I could fill with more delight than 50 common years could ever contain. Pretty great, right?
Totally, voiced the artist, as he tugged on 3 dreadlocks, patted his stomach, and then laced up a black combat boot. Totally agree.
And what time should we meet tomorrow, cool cats? Inquired the billionaire, with a look that confirmed he was quite sure of the answer.
5 AM, the entrepreneur and the artist replied enthusiastically, in unison. Chapter 11. Navigating the Tides of Life. The best and most beautiful things in this world cannot be seen or even heard, but must be felt with the heart. Helen Keller. The entrepreneur had learned to sail as a child. She'd loved the sensation of salt water on her young face, and the feelings of freedom that being out on the vast sea brought her spirit. She wondered why she had stopped sailing. In that instant, she also considered why she had given up so many of the pursuits that had brought her such harmony, and she cherished the fact that in this basic moment, in a small boat gliding through the endless Indian Ocean, she was truly open and wildly alive. Our culture measures success by how much money we have, the amount of achievement we complete, and how much influence we reach. Yet, thought the entrepreneur, while both the Spellbinder and Mr. Riley agree that those victories are important, they've encouraged me to consider how well I'm running my life by another series of metrics as well. By my connection with my natural power, and by my intimacy with my authenticity, and by the vitality around my physicality, and by the size of my joy. This seems like a much better way to look at success, being both accomplished in the world, yet peaceful within myself. Her time at the Spellbinders Conference, and her wonderful days here on this pristine island, with people who still took the time to say good morning, smile at strangers, and show genuine warmth, continue to inspire and provoke both tiny and large shifts in her understanding of the true nature of a productive, prosperous, and fulfilling life. The entrepreneur was noticing she was becoming less machine-like and more human. She no longer checked her technology compulsively. She couldn't remember feeling so creative, so available to the miraculous wonders of life.
She'd never been so awake to the blessings every day on Earth brings. And she'd never, or at least she couldn't recall a time when she had, felt so thankful. Yes, utterly appreciative for everything she'd experienced. She realized the hard points of her life had strengthened her and made her more insightful, interesting, and wise. A fascinating and richly colorful life is stamped with many scars, she began to understand. She promised herself that she'd exploit the challenge she was facing with her investors to raise her grade of courage. The partner's takeover attempt would simply escalate her commitment to defending the natural heroism she'd learned we all have within us, at our center beneath the layers of fear, insecurity, and limitation that we all collect as we advance through life. The behaviors of her untrustworthy partners would only serve to make her a braver, better, and more decent person. Often, a bad example teaches us more about who we wish to become than a good one could ever provide. And in this world of so many hardened human beings who have lost access to who they truly are, she vowed to conduct the remainder of her days modeling excellence, resilience, and the utmost of kindness. As the entrepreneur and the artist navigated their little wooden vessel through the waters that were as clear as crystal, around coral that could be brutal if struck, and farther away from the beach where the billionaire had delivered his morning instruction, the entrepreneur spotted the distant landmass where Mr. Riley suggested she and her new love have a picnic. She also detected an ever-growing affection for the large man who sat next to her. Though they came from entirely different universes, their chemistry was undeniable. It was as if galaxies had collided. And though they had different ways of operating, their compatibility was as nothing she'd experienced before. Her mother had once told her that if you are fortunate enough to fall in love, even two or three times within a lifetime, make each of these stories count fully. Her companion's artistic powers intrigued her. His desire to be great on his own terms attracted her. His occasional hard edges challenged her. His sense of humor amused her. His palpable compassion moved her. And his dark eyes melted her.
"This was a good idea," the artist said as the entrepreneur adjusted the set of the sail
and skillfully directed the boat around some buoys placed there by early morning fishermen.
"To come out here, away from everything, I needed a break from the learning. I'm loving all the information. I'm getting so much from Mr. Riley. Man, he's a treasure. But my head is full. I don't want to think for a while. I just want to have some fun and enjoy life. Being out here with you is special."
"Thanks," replied the entrepreneur simply, as her hair waved playfully in the wind and her sparkling eyes stayed fixed on the water in front of her.
"This is the happiest I've seen her look since I met her at the conference," thought the artist.
He put an arm around the entrepreneur. She didn't retreat in any way, remaining relaxed as their brightly painted vessel ventured deeper into the ocean. After a while, the small island they had been heading toward came into clearer focus. "The billionaire's team stocked us up for a pretty good picnic," noted the entrepreneur. "How about we drop anchor in the shallow area over there and have lunch on the white sand part of the beach?" The island looked deserted aside from the well-fed seagulls, some with live fish dangling from their skinny yellow beaks that soared overhead, and the gigantic turtle ambling along the damp shoreline as though he ruled it.
"Cool," the artist replied. "I'm good with that," he added as he took off his shirt unselfconsciously and dove into the water with a wide splash.
The delightful meal the two enjoyed consisted of grilled spicy prawn and a fresh mango salad, along with a humongous chunk of pecorino cheese flown in that morning from Italy. Watermelon mixed with pineapple and kiwi had been provided for dessert. The entrepreneur shared her longing to build one of the world's greatest companies, as they savored the food and relaxed in that sanctuary of peaceful isolation. She spoke of her desire to build a genuine empire, and then, perhaps, to retire in style to the rustic side of Evitha. She also confided even more of her pained childhood, from the terrible divorce of her parents to the depth of her trauma around the violent passage of her beloved father. She spoke in further detail of the series of failed relationships that had caused her to concentrate most of her time on her work, and the loneliness she felt when she wasn't in the process of advancing her business.
"Those weren't failed relationships," mused the artist as he munched joyfully on a chunk of watermelon. "They made you who you are, right? And I really like who you are." "Actually," said the artist candidly, "I love who you are."
He leaned over and kissed the entrepreneur. "What took you so long to say that?" she asked.
"I don't know. My confidence has been low for a long time," confessed the artist. "But hearing the Spellbinder at the seminar, and meeting you and feeling our amazing vibe, and then being on this totally insane yet incredible adventure, I don't know. It's making me believe more in myself again. This is all helping me to trust life again, I guess. To open up to someone again is great. I should paint later today. Something special is going to show up. I just know it."
"Yes, you should," encouraged the entrepreneur. "I sense it too. You're going to be a hugely successful and truly legendary painter." And then, after a lengthy pause, she added, "I love you too, by the way." The romance of that moment being shared by the two new members of the 5 a.m. club was suddenly broken by the sound of loud hip-hop music. A figure could be seen in the water moving dazzlingly fast, zigzagging and then racing along straightaways. It soon became evident who this noisy and uninvited intruder was. Stone Riley, riding on a souped-up jet ski and wearing a top hat that had been strapped to his chin. Yes, a top hat. And if you looked closely, you would see a skull and crossbone symbol on it, the sort that sits on pirate flags. Soon he, too, was up on the unspoiled beach with the two lovers. Soon he, too, was eating the prawns and mango salad and wolfing down large pieces of the fresh fruit dessert. And soon he was holding hands with the entrepreneur and the artist. This man was a pure oddball and a most human hero. The entrepreneur and the artist looked at each other as the billionaire did his thing. They shook their heads, clapped their hands, and laughed easy laughs. "Dudes," shouted the billionaire above the volume of the thumping music as his jet ski bobbed in the shallow water. "Missed you two. Hope you don't mind me crashing your picnic," he communicated with food in his mouth. Without waiting for an answer, he turned up the decibel level of the song and sang along to the words. "Gnarly tune, right?" he asked with all the energy of a power plant. "Deaf," replied the artist instinctively. "I mean, definitely," he corrected. The three companions spent the rest of that unforgettable afternoon swimming, singing, dancing, and talking. That evening, the billionaire hosted a magnificent dinner out on his beach, which was lit with tiki torches, cream-colored lanterns, and what you would have guessed were thousands of candles. A long wooden table, draped with the finest of linens, supported platters of exquisitely prepared food. The Spellbinder also appeared at the banquet, swapping stories with the billionaire while a few of Mr. Riley's other friends showed up later to play the bongos, share in the fabulous meal, and sip some fine wine. Even the ultra-professional and exceptionally hospitable attendants were encouraged to join the festivities. It was all surreal and special. For an instant, the entrepreneur reflected on the preciousness of the evening and recalled a quote her father had placed on the door of the family fridge. It was from Dale Carnegie, the self-help author, and it read, "One of the most tragic things I know about human nature is that all of us tend to put off living. We are all dreaming of some magical rose garden over the horizon, instead of enjoying the roses that are blooming outside our windows today." The entrepreneur smiled to herself. she realized she would postpone living fully no more. She'd not only fallen in love with a good man, she was beginning to experience a lavish lust for life itself. At 5 a.m. the next morning, the sound of a helicopter pierced the sereneness that only presents itself at that hour of the day. The entrepreneur and the artist waited on the beach as they'd promised the billionaire they would. They held hands, tightly, and awaited the next lesson he told them he'd share. But the billionaire was nowhere to be found. An assistant wearing a crisp shirt the color of the sky and pressed Bermuda shorts the hue of a tomato, with red leather sandals, ran down from the home of the titan of industry. "Bonjour," she said in a highly polished way. "Mr. Riley has requested that I escort you to his helipad. He has a huge gift for you both, but you'll need to hurry, please. We're on a strict timeline." The three of them scampered along the beach, up a groomed trail through lush trees, past an herb garden with wooden signs containing quotes from famous leaders, as well as one that said, "Trespassers will be composted," and finally to an expansive, manicured meadow. At the center of it sat a gleaming helicopter with its rotors whirring against the radiance of the early morning lightfall. Inside the aircraft, a single pilot could be seen. He wore aviator glasses, a black flat-brimmed baseball cap, and an all-black uniform. As his passengers were led inside, the pilot remained silent, manipulating the controls and writing on what appeared to be a detailed checklist attached to a scuffed-up clipboard with the phrase, "Rise and shine so you'll escape the misery of mediocrity," written at the top in red. A smiley face emoji was evident below this line. "Good morning," said the entrepreneur enthusiastically to the pilot. "Where's Mr. Riley?" The pilot didn't answer. He tuned a dial, tweaked a knob, and made another tick mark on the white page. "Good luck and have a safe flight, you two," announced the assistant as she adjusted the seatbelt and placed headphones with a microphone snugly onto the heads of her VIP guests.
"Where the heck are we going?"
demanded the artist, reverting to angry man status. No reply. The door shut with a thud, then locked with a click. The engine noise grew louder, and the propeller accelerated its rotations. Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh went the sound. The pilot, seemingly in some sort of imperturbable trance, and certainly not at all friendly, pushed the control stick. The helicopter began to rise above the grassy field. Unexpectedly, the aircraft tilted to the left, dramatically. Then it descended aggressively toward the earth in a free fall, before jerking upward again.
"Total disaster," shouted the artist. "This pilot is incompetent. I hate him."
"Just breathe. All will be well," reasoned the entrepreneur. She looked relaxed, secure, and in complete control. Her morning training was working. She pulled the artist closer to her. "I'm here. We'll be safe. This will end well." Soon, the helicopter was high in the sky and moving steadily, efficiently and gracefully. The quiet pilot fiddled with the dials and tinkered with the controls, seemingly oblivious to the fact he carried two passengers.
"I've seen that watch before," observed the artist as he spied the big timepiece on the pilot's lean wrist. "Same one Stone had on at the Spellbinder's presentation. This is nuts," he stated in a quivering voice.
The painter was sweating like a polar bear in a heat wave.
"Own your morning, elevate your life," came the singing voice from the front of the helicopter. "Hi, cats, bonjour. Enjoying being members of the 5 a.m. club this morning?" he questioned in a raspy tone. "Boy, oh boy, you're gonna love the surprise that's coming. Another country for another lesson on the morning routine of legendary leaders, creative geniuses, and the great women and men of the world."
The pilot turned his head around radically and whipped off his sunglasses intensely. Then he let out a monumental burp. It was the billionaire.
"Hey, people, I didn't mean to scare you two glorious human beings. I do have my helicopter pilot's license, you know,"
said Mr. Riley sincerely, almost apologetically.
"Sure," remarked the artist,
still clinging to the entrepreneur like a gambler holding his last chip.
"Got it years ago," the billionaire continued. "Helicopters are uber cool. But with all my business ventures these days, I don't get any airtime I used to. Sorry for the rough liftoff. I guess I need more practice."
"So where are we going?" the entrepreneur asked as she eased into her supple leather seat.
"Agra," was the billionaire's one-word answer.
"What does that mean?" asked the artist. "What's an Agra?"
"I'm taking you guys back to the airport," said the billionaire. "Gotta keep us moving on this once-in-a-lifetime adventure we're on."
"We're leaving Mauritius?" wondered the entrepreneur with disappointment. Her bracelets dangled and knocked against each other as she said this.
"What about everything you still have to share with us?" the artist asked. "We still haven't learned that 20-20-20 formula you say will revolutionize our lives. You told us that it's pretty much the foundation of the 5 a.m. method. I've been waiting to learn it," argued the artist, punching a fist into a hand again. "And I really, really love Mauritius. I wasn't ready to leave."
"So do I," agreed the entrepreneur. "I thought you promised us you'd get into the detailed tactics around what to do after we get up at 5 a.m. And at the Spellbinders conference, you promised that you'd share practical productivity hacks so I could scale up my business and some key techniques to build my own fortune. And me and my man only had one picnic together, and you crashed it with your loud music and your pimped-up jet ski." No one spoke for a moment. Then, slowly, everyone in the helicopter began to giggle.
"Relax, guys," hollered the billionaire. "My home is your home. You can come back to Mauritius any time you want. I'll send the same drivers and the same jet, and I'll make sure you feel the same love from me and my awesome team. No sweat. Happy to be helpful. Always."
He adjusted another dial before adding,
"I've got a plane waiting for us on the runway right now. You lovebirds have been tremendous students. Absolutely first rate. You've passionately embraced the Spellbinders' teachings. You've been up with the sun and on time every morning. I've seen all your progress. So I wanted to give you a great present today."
"A present?" the artist queried. "I'll need to get back to my studio at home pretty soon. I've got some serious restructuring of my craft and fixing of my life to do after all this."
"And I'll need to be at my company soon, too," the entrepreneur said. Some of the worry lines returned to her forehead as she pronounced these words, though there were many fewer than before she had joined the 5 a.m. club.
"Well, not yet, guys. Not yet, please," pleaded the billionaire. "We're going to Agra."
"I have no idea where that is," admitted the entrepreneur.
"Agra is in India," the billionaire explained. "I'm taking you two to see one of the 7 wonders of the world. And get set to learn the next part of the 5 a.m. method. Everything you've learned so far has been preparation for all that's coming. Lock and load, dudes. We're now ready to get into the advanced information to help you drive exponential productivity, maximum performance, legendary leadership, and a towering life that upgrades the world. Get set to receive the most practical information you could ever learn on the morning routine of world builders and history makers. The best is about to come."
The billionaire expertly landed the helicopter next to a pristine private jet that had its turbines running. Unlike the first one, this aircraft was all black. But like the one that brought the two students to Mauritius, it had 5AC emblazoned on the tail, also in a hue of orange similar to a mandarin.
"Let's go to incredible India," exclaimed the billionaire energetically.
"Let's go then," replied the entrepreneur and the artist. One of the most valuable experiences of their extraordinary escapade with Stone Riley, the eccentric magnate, was about to begin. Chapter 12. The 5 a.m. Club Discovers the Habit Installation Protocol. I hated every minute of training, but I said, "Don't quit. Suffer now and live the rest of your life as a champion." Muhammad Ali. The next morning's lesson was scheduled to be on how the most productive leaders and performers on the planet install the habits that make them superstars and live fascinating, adventurous, and purposeful lives. In reply to Mr. Riley's request, both the entrepreneur and the artist had arranged to extend their time away. They understood the profound value of the training they were being exposed to, and they knew their smartest move was to embrace it fully.
"Hi, cats!" shouted the billionaire, running up to his companions as the Indian sun rose timidly against a horizon that was at once barren and electrifying. It was precisely 5 a.m.
The tycoon wore a black, Nehru-collared shirt, cargo shorts, and black sandals. He was smiling broadly. He still glowed from the sunshine of Mauritius, and today he wore a turban.
"This morning I'll be walking you through the Spellbinder's insights on installing the peak performance regimes that will help you activate your greatness in business and in life. As I shared with you in an earlier lesson, what makes the best, is not their genetics, but their habits, and not the extent of their gifts, but the strength of their grit. Today's lesson will walk you through what the science and research tell us we must do to let go of the behaviors that weaken us, and to code in the ones that will serve us."
"What's grit?" asked the entrepreneur, paying attention to every word the billionaire spoke. Today, she had her hair in a ponytail and simple shoes on her feet.
"It's a term popularized by social psychologist Angela Duckworth, who studied elite performers in the fields of business, education, the military, and sports. She found that what makes the most successful achievers so great isn't their inherent talent, but their levels of commitment, discipline, resilience, and perseverance. Grit is her word to describe these traits."
"Cool, brother," said the artist. "That inspires me not to give up on a painting when I hit a wall of self-doubt, or when I get frustrated by my lack of progress, or when I get scared others in my field will laugh because I'm producing art that is fresh and original instead of copied and derivative."
"Good," responded the billionaire as he rubbed his muscular abs. "Albert Einstein wrote, 'Great spirits have always encountered violent opposition from mediocre minds. The mediocre mind is incapable of understanding the man who refuses to bow blindly to conventional prejudices and chooses instead to express his opinions courageously and honestly.'"
"Love that," spoke the artist exuberantly, displaying an expression that showed his growing pride in trusting his personal vision when it came to his craft.
"Anywho, let's get back on track and keep jamming on the most potent ways to install world-class habits that last, versus ones that dissolve after a few weeks of trying to make them stick. Of course, this morning's mentoring class is absolutely essential for you two, because even though you guys are up at 5 a.m. daily now, we want the discipline to become a lifetime routine. Oh, and an essential part of world-class habit installation involves learning how the pros build remarkable self-control and unleash rare air amounts of willpower. So, we should start there."
The three companions were standing in front of the Taj Mahal. They were alone. The structure was unspeakably sublime as they stared at it, a genuine testimony to the rewards of architectural and engineering mastery.
"I love India so much," declared the billionaire. "One of the greatest nations on earth. And this place, well, it's one of the seven wonders of the world for a reason. Breathtakingly beautiful, right?"
"True," admitted the entrepreneur as she sipped some very hot coffee. The billionaire held a large water bottle in his left hand. It had a statement printed on it, as his water bottles often did, which he read to his two students with gusto. "The hero does not become great during periods of comfort. The illustrious and noble souls of our world became strong, brave, and moral, whilst standing resolutely in the storms of adversity, difficulty, and doubt. It is in the moment that you face your deepest weakness that you receive the chance to forge your greatest strengths. Real power, then, comes not from a life of ease, but one of intense effort, devoted discipline, and demanding action in the direction of what your supreme self knows to be right. To continue at a time when you ache to stop, to advance when you long to quit, to persist in the instant when you feel like giving up, is to claim your membership among the great warriors and honorable characters
who led humanity to a better place through their earned invincibility.
Wow, uttered the artist. Some great poet wrote that?
Nope, mentioned the billionaire. Those words are all mine. Mr. Riley then raised a hand into the air, and you know what happened. Out of the early morning mist appeared an impeccably dressed and very attractive aide.
We're all so happy you're back in India, sir. We have missed you, she uttered. Here's what you asked for.
The billionaire bowed slightly and gave his assistant a friendly smile. A spectacularly ornate pashmina shawl was handed to the Titan, who stretched it out in the light. As you know, pashmina is a fine type of wool from Kashmir. The term itself translates into soft gold in the Kashmiri language, and if you saw it, you'd agree it looked so. Detailed stitching had gone into the fabric, and as the two students focused more closely on it, they could see the 5-3-1 creed of the willpower warrior sewn into the shawl. Below this title was a series of statements that explained what the 5-3-1 meant. It was all quite unique. Here's what the handcrafted stitching said. The five scientific truths behind excellent habits. Truth number one. World-class willpower isn't an inborn strength, but a skill developed through relentless practice. Getting up at dawn is perfect self-control training. Truth number two. Personal discipline is a muscle. The more you stretch it, the stronger it grows. Therefore, the samurais of self-regulation actively create conditions of hardship to build their natural power. Truth number three. Like other muscles, willpower weakens when tired. Recovery is, therefore, absolutely necessary for the expression of mastery and to manage decision fatigue. Truth number four. Installing any great habit successfully follows a distinct four-part pattern for automation of the routine. Follow it explicitly for lasting results. Truth number five. Increasing self-control in one area of your life elevates self-control in all areas of your life. This is why joining the 5 a.m. club is the game-changing habit that will lift everything else that you do. The three values of heroic habit makers. Value number one, victory demands consistency and persistency. Value number two, following through on what has started determines the size of the personal respect that will be generated. Value number three, the way you practice in private is precisely the way you'll perform once you're in public. The one general theory of self-discipline Spartans. To regularly do that which is hard but important when it feels most uncomfortable is how warriors are born. The billionaire closed his eyes and repeated this phrase. I don't wish for an easy life, because there is no growth of my powers there. Give me a challenging life, one that brings out the finest in me. For this makes an iron will and an unconquerable character. This shawl is my gift to you two, the industrialist went on. Please do study the five scientific truths and the three values along with the one general theory that make up the 5-3-1 creed of the willpower warrior. It will serve you brilliantly as you encode habits that endure. Within a few moments, an auto rickshaw sped up from an empty parking area off in the distance. Out came a smiling young man dressed smartly in a dark gray jacket, perfectly pressed trousers, and polished brown shoes. Namaste, Arjun, said the billionaire as he clasped his hands together. Hey, boss, was the warm reply of this assistant. Though his words were casual, the way he articulated them demonstrated immense respect for his employer. You two know the story behind the Taj Mahal? The billionaire asked as the aide stood off to the side, looking ready to offer any help Mr. Riley required. Please tell us, the entrepreneur requested. She carried a single legal notepad with a simple black rollerball pen. All the billionaire's early talk of how the misuse of technology leads to the destruction of creativity and an extreme reduction in productivity was having a major impact on her. Today, she wore a bangle engraved with the words,
Dreams don't come true while you're sleeping.
Sure, it's a rad story, gushed the billionaire, retreating to more of his California surfer slang. Like you two, sweethearts, the Mughal Emperor Shah Jahan, who masterminded this marvel, was very much in love. As a symbol of his devotion to and adoration of his wife, Mumtaz, after her death in 1631, he committed himself to the construction of a monument the likes of which the world had never seen. One so extravagantly sensational, staggeringly inspirational, and structurally exceptional that all onlookers would understand the depth of this man's affection as they experienced all its splendor.
It does something to my heart when I look at it, murmured the artist, staring at the marble facade that glimmered in front of him.
He squinted as the early morning rays struck his eyes. He was looking more fit, calm, confident, and poised than the entrepreneur had ever observed.
Me too, agreed the billionaire with a note of melancholy in his voice. Seeing the Taj Mahal isn't just an excursion of the intellect. It's also a resurrection of the spirit. It wakes even the numbest person up to what we, as human creatures, are capable of producing. But to continue, once the Maharaja set his bold intention, his workers started the process of translating that lofty vision into a definite reality. Because, as you both now know, ambition without implementation is a ridiculous delusion. You two are now much more fluent in the insight that anything legendary requires generous amounts of industry, artistry, and persistency. Mastery isn't a sudden event. It really is a ceaseless process that may take years of painstaking craftsmanship, practice, sacrifice, and suffering before the finished project intensifies to a level that moves the world. This is yet another GCA, a gargantuan competitive advantage, continued Mr. Riley. To remain loyal to your noble ideal, not only during the weeks after you thought up the dream, but over the long months and perhaps extended years in the parched desert of creative implementation, while you endure rejection, exhaustion, the stones of jealous peers, the skepticism of your loved ones, being diverted by other attractive opportunities, and finding your way through the isolated winters of self-doubt. This is what separates the also-rans from the icons. Anyone can be great for a minute. The sport of icons is sustaining genius-grade performance over a lifetime, and that takes unusual grit and patience uncommon in these superficial times, the kind that the majority of society today has sadly failed to develop. Know what I mean?
The billionaire was animated, energetic, and completely jacked up. He threw an arm into the air and flashed the universal victory sign with two fingers. It seemed he did so just to protect his inspiration, and to insulate the fire that had been activated within his heart.
Many decades ago, Albert E. N. Gray delivered an address for salespeople in the insurance industry. He called it the common denominator of success, and it distilled what the author had identified over 30 years of study as the greatest key to fortune in one's business, family, health, financial, and spiritual lives.
What was it? Inquired the entrepreneur, with acute interest as she sipped her now tepid coffee.
Well, offered the billionaire, from my recollection of the pamphlet that was made from the talk, and then widely circulated to top sales professionals, he said, I had been brought up on the popular belief that the secret of success is hard work. But I had seen so many people work hard without succeeding that I became convinced hard work was not the real secret.
So what was it? Implored the artist impatiently.
Dude, I'm getting to it, the magnate replied playfully. So Albert Gray said, this common denominator of success is so big, so powerful, and it is, interjected the entrepreneur, equally unable to wait for the answer. Gray explained that the common denominator of success, the secret of success of every man and woman who has ever been successful, lies in the fact that they form the habit of doing things that failures don't like to do.
Simple and profound, observed the artist, as he ran one hand down one dreadlock.
He, too, sipped some now cold coffee.
Top producers make it a habit to do the high-value activities that average ones don't feel like doing, even when they, too, don't feel like doing them, the billionaire continued. And by practicing the desired behavior over and over, their self-mastery and personal discipline grows, and the new routine becomes automated.
The artist nodded, then stroked his goatee. He was thinking about his art.
I truly have been limiting myself because of my insecurities, he thought once again. I'm so worried about what others will say about my work that I'm not creating enough. And Mr. Riley's right. I'm not being patient and building the self-control that doing difficult but valuable things brings. I sort of just do what I want, anytime I want. Some days I have some drive, and other times I sleep all day. Sometimes I'm lazy. Some days I work hard. I'm like a cork bobbing in the water, with no steady direction, no real structure, no real discipline. I play video games a lot, sometimes for many hours, and I have this habit of rushing to create paintings that sell fast when I need some money, instead of slowing down and concentrating all my skill on the one opus that will define the extent of my expertise and turn my whole field on its head by its genius.
So, the billionaire expounded, returning to his story about the making of the Taj Mahal. For 22 years, not 22 days and not 22 months, 22 years, over 20,000 workers toiled in the scorching Indian sun. Block of marble by block of marble carried from immense distances by over 1,000 elephants. The army of craftsmen steadily erected the structure you're seeing. They faced architectural roadblocks, environmental extremes, and unexpected tragedies along the journey. Yet they were focused, fearless, and relentless, dazzlingly committed to doing whatever it took to get the emperor's gorgeous dream done.
Really incredible, you know,
said the artist as he surveyed the landmark. A butterfly sailed by. A few raindrops sprinkled on his face. And, believe it or not, more doves soared high above the billionaire's head. What's with all the doves, rainbows, and butterflies that seem to surround you a lot of the time? Pressed the entrepreneur as she adjusted the t-shirt she was wearing. It had a quote from Oscar Wilde on it that seemed to fit the newfound awareness of the businesswoman. It read, "Be yourself. Everyone else is already taken."
"We all have the magic. Most of us don't know how to use it," was the Baron's brief and mysterious reply. So, getting back to the Taj Mahal, after 2 decades, this mausoleum was complete, he remarked in a hushed tone. And humankind was given one of the greatest products of poetic audacity it has ever received.
I'm beyond inspired, confided the entrepreneur. Thank you so much for bringing us here to Agra. I'm ever so grateful.
The emperor must have really cared for his wife, mused the artist, delivering a penetrating reveal of the wonderfully obvious. He then looked intently at the entrepreneur. Her radiance went far beyond the basic beauty of starlets, models, and women of high glamour. Hers was a quieter, more profound loveliness, the kind that makes sunrises special and moonbeams enchanting. He thought to himself that this woman's magnetism comes from a place deeper than merely an attractive face. It was a charm born of struggle, an electricity emanating from hurt, an energy emitting through a formidable intellect and a prettiness formed by her robust resolve to step into a person of true power, wisdom, and love.
The Taj Mahal is such a direct metaphor for you cats to consider on the subject of staying with the commitment to a new habit through whatever hardships show up, and remaining sincere to your ideals, not only in the seasons of comfort, but especially when it all gets terrifically difficult. And that's why this morning's coaching is so exceedingly important. What you're about to learn will help you implement so much of the philosophies I've shared with you up until now. The Spellbinder has carefully developed the model I'm about to reveal, over many, many years working with business builders, masterful achievers, and changemakers like myself.
Today's session isn't so much about why you should embrace the morning ritual of rising before the sun. It's much more about how you can get this routine done. As a lifetime regime, explained the industrialist.